always ready for action. Nip it in the bud, we never relaxing. Outcast is everlasting.
Hello and welcome into the latest edition of the Rebel Room. I am Taylor Byrne alongside Ray Brewer, getting you ready for conference tournament week here in Las Vegas. Not only for the Mountain West, in which UNLV will be a 7 seed playing Wednesday at 2:30 p.m. against Reno or Nevada or UNR. Or
got them right where we want them.
Whatever you prefer to call that school up north. Also in town, recording this on Monday, so the West Coast Conference finishes up Monday, and Tuesday night is their championship game. Pac-12 gets going at the same days as the Mountain West. That's over at MGM Grand Garden, and then the WAC moves into the Orleans once the West Coast is done. So Basketball Central here in Las Vegas, I think it's a great week just to go and check out some games. I'm going to try and get over to three of those four tournaments, but obviously the Mountain West is the one that I'm focused on with UNLV playing in a play-in game for the first time ever. This is their lowest finish in the league. And yet one thing that we had talked about a lot of the year is that even as UNLV was struggling, you know, the 1-5 start in league play, it seemed like a very winnable bracket, not anybody, you know, dominant in this league. Ray, do you still feel that way? How much chance are you giving the Rebels to, you know, do – it would have to be win four in 4 days?
Well, and that's the thing. Glass half empty, UNLV hasn't won 4 straight games all year. Glass half empty, the teams that they should have to beat to win the Mountain West, they're 1-5 against this year.
And sounds about right.
Yeah. But glass half full, they really haven't been blown out of any game. They've had leads against teams they're facing. The problem is that if they do get past Reno Tuesday, Wednesday, which I think they will, they just can't beat San Diego State. San Diego State, I think, brings a toughness that UNLV doesn't have. And even though they arguably should have beaten them last week at home, I just don't see them getting past the Aztecs, especially since San Diego State kind of needs to make it to the semifinals to have a legitimate at-large chance.
Yeah, I mean, they're playing for seeding. I think they're in no matter what, but they obviously they don't want to risk something like that. There is more on the table for them as opposed to UNLV, which would have to win out in order to get to the NCAA tournament. Just for some context, and the Mountain West has switched teams, you know, number of teams so much that it hasn't always had, like, you know, a play-in day. But the times that it has, no play-in team has ever made it further than the semifinals. And that was Boise State last year. And they're the only team to even make it that far. Before that, every team from a play-in game won their first one, lost their second. So that's sort of, you know, the odds definitely stacked against UNLV. The good news is that it all indications are that they will have Pat McCaw. I was skeptical of that. He was knocked out of the Wednesday's loss to San Diego State at home with 14:20 remaining in the game. Chris Wood's head ran into Pat McCaw's face, and he suffered a concussion. He's been going through the steps with that. Talked to Dave Saturday night, and he seemed – and then I talked to the coaches again Sunday just because we were on the same flight, just kind of gauging it. And, you know, no one can guarantee anything at this stage, because there could always be setbacks, or, you know, could not respond that well. But it seems like they're expecting to have him back practicing at least by Tuesday and able to play in Wednesday's game. And so that would be big for them. I think even if he didn't, I think they could win that game. I mean, David Carter, it's probably his last, you know, game or two as Reno's coach. I think most of those guys have just kind of given up on the year, whereas UNLV, not going to be a big crowd playing at 2:30 on a Wednesday afternoon, but whatever fans are there are most likely going to be in support. Unless, you know, I'm hearing that New Mexico is still going to travel decent, and they play at noon. So if Lobo fans stick around, who are they cheering for? You know, probably not UNLV.
At least they're going to wear red.
I would think in general, but who knows?
Wouldn't it be cool if UNLV could make a run in the tournament because it's on the UNLV home court and UNLV fans?
In the week, it is in their home arena, but not on their home court.
For whatever it's worth, though, it'd be cool if Rebel Nation could take advantage of hosting the tournament and create a true advantage for UNLV. right?
It's 2:30 on a Wednesday.
I know. I'm just saying, forget about the Wednesday game that you and me are going to go watch. What about Thursday at 6 against UNLV's top rival in the league on your home court? Season on the line.
Not on their home court.
On their home, whatever. Whatever
now
it is.
Now that I did it the first time, I have to do it every time.
I mean, it's an easy commute, basically,
well,
for
sure,
locals.
But, I mean, why? You know, attendance has been down all year.
I know.
And so why would you necessarily expect at this stage, with the seventh place finish and all that, to, you know, then that's when the light flips?
But, I mean, I haven't even seen a push from anybody to, like, UNLV Athletics or whomever to get UNLV fans to the tournament.
Yeah. I mean,
you know.
I would agree
with
that.
And in past years when they were decent, like the Anthony Bennett year, for example, they lost in the championship game to New Mexico, remember? There was like 80% New Mexico fans in the arena that day.
That's an over-exaggeration, but there were a lot. New Mexico fans travel for it. It's a vacation. I mean, that's the other thing. Each program gets an allotted amount of tickets, and so obviously living in Vegas, you would have more an opportunity to get some just through secondary, and then also just when schools return some of theirs. But it's never going to be a completely home court, home crowd advantage for UNLV. It's just the way that they sell it, and it shouldn't be. You know, it's already enough of an advantage that they get to play in their, you know, in the Thomas and Mack Center, and so, you know, certainly the league wants to dole out tickets as evenly as they can.
So they'll be favored by 8 or 9 against Reno.
Yeah, I'd say around
and
there.
And then be about a 4-point dog against San Diego State.
Maybe I. What was? Do you remember what last Wednesday's game?
3.
What the number was?
It was 3.
Yeah.
They were a 3-point dog.
I think they closed as 2, 2.5. So okay. Maybe around. So could be like 3.5, I guess. And obviously, a lot of that depends on if McCaw is able to return and how he plays in that first game. Nothing official on it, but I'm not expecting to see Rashad Vaughn play again this season. Dantley Walker, I'm not sure. After Saturday's game, that 13-point win at San Jose State, Rice said that they were thinking he would be able to start practicing late in the week last week, but it wasn't progressing. He's got that sprained MCL in the knee, and so I'm really not sure if we'll see him return, but obviously Vaughn and McCaw, the bigger pieces. McCaw sounds like he's coming back. Vaughn, I would bet against it. But it's, I mean, they're going to have opportunities. Like you said, they don't get blown out. You know, it's the one game pretty much at Utah State, because even the 9-point loss to Boise, that was in overtime.
Almost
every
State
other
game,
one,
they
was
were
close.
Ahead by three at the half. I mean, the Utah State game, they were ahead by three at the half.
Yeah.
So they were technically in the game.
Yeah. You know, so they're going to have some chances, but just the way that we've seen them perform, even with those chances, you know, they led 13 straight games, probably I guess 14 now with that San Jose State game, and you know, record not necessarily great considering that fact.
They do, you know, Wednesday lost at home to San Diego State, basically finished the game with 6 players, Morgan with 4 fouls. I thought put a great effort forth, and
they did. Yeah.
That's encouraging to me that. Unlike Reno, whose coach is likely gone after the season, you could see where Reno's kind of mailed it in the last few weeks. That's not the case with UNLV, and that's what kind of makes this an exciting week to cover. You never know what you're going to see. I mean, I know that I don't expect them to play past Thursday, but if they were playing Saturday, I wouldn't be stunned.
Saturday, I probably would. If they found themselves to Friday semifinals, like, I wouldn't be shocked by that. But if they're able to win 3 in a row and get to Saturday's title game, I would be very impressed.
I just think
that.
if they found a way to beat San Diego State, the momentum from that game and who knows by then who's going to be in the semis with you.
Yeah,
you could assume that the brackets pan out with the favorites.
Yeah,
but
it would be like Colorado State.
We've seen crazy things on that floor, and if they got the momentum going from winning on Thursday, realizing they were 2 wins away from getting to the tournament,
yeah, but
I think Friday would be like a kitchen sink, throw everything to get to Saturday.
Yeah, but you got to factor in all, I mean, the fatigue, foul trouble is probably always going to be something for them, where it impacts them more. That's, you know, same thing for like a team like Wyoming or Utah State. That's always used a shorter rotation. If a couple of those guys are sitting in UNLV's case, if that's like Wood or Okanobo, you know, kind of inside guys, it just changes a lot. But we'll see. I'm excited for it. I always like the conference tournaments, especially when you get, you know, a team making a run, a team that, you know, wouldn't get to the NCAA tournament without a win. You know, I watched that Sunday in the Missouri Valley final. Now, granted, I did not want that team who had a chance or whose only chance was to win that game, make it into the tournament, to win. And, you know, Northern Iowa overcame an 18-point deficit to end Illinois State's run. But that's, you know, those are the type of games that you want to see. That's the type of excitement when you have a team like, you know, in that example, Illinois State knocking off Wichita, going to the final, you know, and that could be a few different teams in this circumstance. Colorado State and Boise still very much, you know, Boise even tying for the league title, but still very much trying to play its way solidly into the tournament. San Diego State trying to play for seeding, Colorado State trying to play its way in. Wyoming, you know, who had such that great start, knowing that it pretty much has to win the – well, not even pretty much. It has to win the conference tournament in order to get to the NCAA tournament. So it's always – an exciting time. I'm expecting at least a couple of good games. I remember 2 years ago, basically, as I walked in to the arena, there was a buzzer beater. I think it was a Boise State, San Diego State game. You usually get at least a couple, you know, really exciting ones.
Yeah, and I even remember '98, the first year of the league, when the winner wasn't guaranteed an automatic berth. UNLV winning the whole thing and going on a run. And then when it was the WAC tournament in 96, Utah lost to Kentucky in the national championship game, and they had like Keith Van Horn, Andre Miller, Majerus team. They were big. Doliak in the middle. And UNLV, it was like survived an entry game against Hawaii in one of the great games I've seen. And then it was like knocked off Fresno and Tark with Chris Heron. Knocked off Utah. It was just like bam, bam, bam. And next thing you know, they're in the tournament for the first time since they lost to Duke in the Final Four. Just crazy what happens there. And then I remember Marcus Banks' senior year, maybe 03 or 04, the Rebels are playing Colorado State in the championship game. They were favored by like 10 or 11. They were up by 8 with like 4 to play. And I remember I was sitting next to Adam. I was like, who do you think we're going to get in the tournament? What seed do you think we're going to get? And Colorado State came back and beat us. And then they played Duke in the first round of the NCAAs and gave Duke a run for their money. And it was just like Colorado State came out of nowhere to get the bid.
It's fun stuff. And it's all – so I guess it's all your fault that particular year.
I jinxed it. You were counting it up.
Women's tournament also at the MAC this week. UNLV, Kathy Olivier's team, got a 5 seed. Their first game Tuesday. So that's tomorrow for us listening. 2:30 in the afternoon, and then if they would win, you could essentially, it's different tickets, but it's basically back to back. The men's first game is 2:30 on Wednesday afternoon, and the women, if they win that first game, would play at 6 o'clock at night. So, you know, could, if you're looking for, you know, UNLV support, there's your back to back. You got to buy 2 separate tickets, and briefly leave the arena as they clean it up and then let you back in. But there's your opportunity. Football also, I wanted to touch on this quick, getting spring practice started up on Monday. We, you know, Ray, your line has been, you know, the worst thing that UNLV can do is play the season, because it's, you know, it's probably not going to go well. And even if it does, it's not going to go well as the off season and just sort of, you know, building the brand that this coaching staff is very much been focused on. But just maybe what are a couple of things on the specific football part, because we talked a lot about what Tony's trying to do in fundraising and just, you know, reputation and all that stuff. Football wise what do you want to see out of, you know, some of the position groups or just some of the players over these next few weeks as they start spring practice Monday?
I mean, I'm convinced that enthusiasm and energy for the program is going to translate over to the practice field. I've watched Tony give practices at Gorman for 6 years, and every second is valued, and he's got it planned out meticulously. So expect fast-paced, high energy. We have to see the defense be more improved and more organized. Last year, ranked as one of the worst defenses in the nation.
Which continued a trend here. Like the defense has always been bad.
And not only were they just bad, they were oftentimes out of position. You saw players wide open for touchdowns. And I know Tony's big into making sure the players know what's expected and where they're supposed to be. And a lot of times in spring, especially early when you're not in pads, it's more of, you know, getting people in the right spot. And we're talking a new offense and new defense, which we really haven't even talked about yet. It's just been his overall views for the program. So I'm going to be, you know, curious as you and the fans are what kind of defense are they going to run? What are they going to do offensively? Of course, the offensive line, another weak point from last year. Blake Decker, who I've gone back and forth on whether I liked him as quarterback, he definitely got tackled a lot.
That's true.
And who knows if he's going to be the quarterback, if it's going to be the JC kid from Laneley in Oakland who's going to be the quarterback, but at least there's going to be a competition.
Yeah, and that's definitely
And competition breeds success. And if somebody goes down, you have somebody capable to come in and plug. So defense, offensive line, everybody wants to know about the quarterback. It's the sexy position. I actually think they're going to be fine at running back. When they get their signees
in. They've got
some
options there.
Yeah, they've got some signees.
And receiver seems like a strength still, obviously, yeah, with Boyd and Keys kind of being some of the main guys.
So, yeah, and you know, Tony is – he uses the fullback a lot. Philippi.
Yep, moving over.
To fullback. And he's a guy who played for Tony at Gorman, thrived for Tony at Gorman. And he needs some of those guys who understand his message to relay to the others. Philippi's a guy who's been there 3 years already. He's got the respect of his teammates.
And this will be his third position, too.
His third position,
went from safety to linebacker and now flipping over to the offense playing fullback.
But just for me, I think some of the access that fans are getting to the program through social media, like I think the average fan wouldn't have known that the team's allowed to have like organized training on the field and organized weight training before spring practice starts. Which every team does.
Yeah.
But until they started putting...
It was never broadcast.
Yeah, they put photos of it up now. And people are like, oh, my God, are they breaking any rules? What's going on? What are they doing out there? Like, no, teams actually do this everywhere. It's, you know, you're going through just running drills and whatever it may be. And I just, like I've told everybody, the energy right now and the hope, you know, give Las Vegans a little hope and we just devour it.
I just wanted to close quickly talking about the All Mountain West team. So the coaches in May voted to remove the media from the actual postseason ballot. So that, like, the, you know, official team is not out yet. I think that comes out tomorrow, Tuesday. But the media sent out their own poll, and Matt Eumanns and I had a combined vote in that. And so what we had for that, and it was, you know, all stuff we didn't have to really like debate too much of it. We kind of agreed. So first team: Derek Marks, JJ O'Brien, Chris Wood, Larry Nance, JJ Avila. The player or fans who have been like so hard on Wood and all this stuff. Like I've seen a lot of pushback to Chris Wood as a first team guy. Look at his freaking numbers. Like I get you want to ding the body language, all this stuff. He's the only person who averages a double double. In league play, he's second in rebounds and blocks, fifth in points and field goal percentage, sixth in free throw percentage, and 10th in minutes played. That's first team. Like I don't care what you think about the kid. That's a first team player. So to me, I felt it was silly. I had to even defend that to a couple of people. Second team: Marvell Harris, Jalen Moore, Winston Shepard, James Webb, A.J. West. Third team: Akeel Quinn, Hugh Greenwood, Bay Hirano, David Collette, and Pat McCaw. In the media poll, Pat was an honorable mention, while Rashad Vaughn was like the last guy on the third team. I explained it as if a guy misses as much time as Vaughn did, which was 7 games, it makes me, you know, bring the microscope out a little more. And not only did McCaw more efficiently pick up the scoring production that was left when Vaughn had to leave the game, he didn't lose anything defensively. He's a better two-way player. I think what he was able to do with the scoring load and then all the different positions he can play, I think he just deserves that. Some people disagree. I don't really care. I would defend Pat McCaw over Rashad Vaughn for that.
Over your family.
Yeah, yeah. Well, my family can't really play basketball very well. But one weird thing with the media poll, and this came out, so Rashad Vaughn was the last guy on the third team. David Collette did not make any of the three teams. He's the freshman for Utah State. He was an honorable mention, and yet he was given freshman of the year. So just kind of weird voting, you know, the way it works out sometimes. My best guess is that some people had Vaughn, like, up on second team and so got him more points.
I'm glad the league decided not to organize this. It created a real good mess.
Yes, a mess. But honestly, after looking at some of the polling, I don't mind media being taken out because there were zero San Diego State guys on the first team. The highest were 9th and 10th in Shepherd and O'Brien, and Skylar Spencer was given Defensive Player of the Year. He was only given it because people don't want to take the time to talk to coaches, watch games more. You got to be able to value defense too, just because it's not in the box score. One of those guys has to be first team, and if you feel like Skylar Spencer is their best defensive player, they're one of the top 5 or 10 defenses in the country. You have to put him then first team, and it's not Skylar Spencer. Make it either O'Brien or Shepherd. We put O'Brien up as the third. We voted him third overall, behind Nance and Marks, and he finished 10th in the media. So that shows you like how far down most other people had him. I just thought that was a little ridiculous.
Winston Shepherd has been Dean at people since Finley Prep.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember.
And it's his versatility, just being able to guard different positions.
And he's long. He's got that length.
And if you want to go talk to someone about J.J. O'Brien's value, go talk to Dave Rice. It's hard to find a bigger fan of O'Brien than Dave. And I'm sure coaches are going to have a guy like O'Brien or a guy like James Webb. One of those, certainly a San Diego State guy, will be up on their first team, which I think is absolutely how it should be. So I'm probably going to end up liking the coaches voting more than the media's, for whatever that's worth. All right. Ray and I will be out at the Mountain West tournament this week. I'm going to catch a little West Coast action, head over to the Pac-12 at some point. It's a good week.
Next week we'll be breaking down UNLV's NCAA. They'll probably be gassed from 4-4, so it'll be a one and done. But at least they'll be there. Oh, no. Just trying to be positive. All right.
For Ray, I'm Taylor. We'll talk to you guys next week. But I know y'all wanted that 808. Can you feel that bass bass?